just thought it was something that's
So tonight we're going to go off topic, talk about Shavuos, which is next week.
That's on topic.
That's on topic. Yeah, off our regular topic, but onto a different regular topic or expected topic. It's true. I'll start at Shavuos. I was trying to figure out what to talk about, and I thought something a little different than usual. I want to talk about Har Sinai, but not about Mount Har Sinai, not about what happened there, but about the mountain itself. If it's a mountain Hashem chose to give the Torah upon, it must be that mountain has something to offer us in terms of lessons, in terms of meaning. So Mount Har Sinai, when the Jews gathered there and experienced Matan Torah and the Revelation, we know that's really the focal point of Shavuos, and as you said, that's where it all started, right over there. The Torah itself was given there, and you know, the Luchos, the Dibros, and gradually the Sefer Torah. But that revelation is something that we build everything upon. Hashem speaking to Klal Yisrael, we heard Hashem speak, Hashem spoke to Moshe, we heard Hashem appoint Moshe as his representative. That's really the foundation of all of our belief, is Hamayim Har Sinai. But the mountain itself, we know less about. There's points here and there about this mountain. Its location nowadays is up for debate. Something we know, something we don't know. Scientists, archaeologists, everyone has their ideas of where Har Sinai may be. Bottom line is we don't have a Masorah. We don't know where it is anymore. I don't know if it really matters where it is anymore. We'll talk about that. But Har Sinai itself to us is a little bit mysterious. What's its significance? Why did Hashem choose Har Sinai? What's this mountain all about? And then when it comes to Shavuos, and we focus about how Klal Yisrael stood around Har Sinai, so what is it about Har Sinai that actually deserved or that led to that big ma'amid there? The first time you find Har Sinai mentioned in the Torah is in the beginning of Sefer Shemos before Matan Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was out and he was grazing his father-in-law's sheep. And it says, I forgot my chumash, let me grab that. Okay. So this is in Shemos Perek Gimel, Pasuk Aleph. Okay, it says Moshe haya roa eson Yisro chosno kon midyan. Moshe was grazing the sheep of his father-in-law Yisro, who was the priest of Midyan. Vayin hages hatson achar hamidbar. He led the tzon, the sheep, like behind the desert or past the desert. Vyavo el har elokim choreva, and he came to the mountain of God towards Chorev. So already the Torah first was the mountain of God. This is long before Ma'amid Har Sinai. So it seems to already have some sort of special status before the Torah was given on Har Sinai. Also, we know that Har Sinai is referred to as Chorev. We'll talk more about its names later on. But the reference here is not to Sinai, it's to Har Elokim, the mountain of God, and it's to Chorev. So my point now being that something is special about this mountain prior to anything happening there. Now the truth is, you know, Rashi explains that it's not really called Har Elokim before Ma'amid Har Sinai, but really the Torah is labeling it that, kind of foreshadowing the future. Meaning because when the Torah was actually recorded, it was already the mountain of Hashem, so now we call it that even before the Torah was given. So that we do have that concept. That's what Rashi explains, the Ibn Ezra. But many other Mefarshim do point this out, and we'll see other sources for this, that the Har Sinai had a meaning long before Matan Torah. And it's very interesting, later on, in the same parak, so Hashem is trying to convince Moshe, you should be the leader to save Klal Yisrael, and Moshe refuses because he's so humble. And Moshe says, how do I know that the Jews listen to me? Give me a sign that we'll really be freed. And as Hashem says to Moshe, this is the sign that I am sending you to free Klal Yisrael. You take the nation out of Mitzrayim, you will serve God on this mountain. So Hashem stresses, this mountain, you're going to come right back to this very mountain and serve me here. So the mountain again has a special meaning to Hashem in some way. This mountain is chosen to reveal himself to Moshe then to Klal Yisrael. I missed a point here. The sneh, the burning bush, happened on Har Sinai, for those who didn't put that together, and that occurred on Har Sinai. So what is it about Har Sinai that's so special? So I want to read to you first, kind of like as an intro, a piece from Oznayim LaTorah. I didn't make copies tonight, I'm sorry, but from Oznayim LaTorah.
Sneh Sinai?
Yeah, there are those who say it's called Sinai because of the sneh, correct.
Okay.
That's correct. We'll talk about that more later on, but there is that connection made. What?
Sinas.
Like hatred?
Mm-hmm.
That's a different, that's with a sin. This is a samich. Yeah, it's a different word. Well, there is a play on words like that as well we'll talk about, but that's not really the same root. So the Oznaim LaTorah, a very common parish people use on the Chumash, he says the following, a very beautiful introduction, we'll call it, to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Har Sinai. He says that it's explained through Midrashim, Marad HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called Dor, so Hashem measured all the generations, and he found the right door to get the Torah. The Dor HaMidbar, the Dor of Mitzrayim, was the right generation to get the Torah. And then Hashem measured all the nations, and he found the right nation to get the Torah would be Klal Yisrael, that we were appropriate to receive the Torah. And he measured all the mountains, and he figured out that the best mountain to give the Torah upon was Har Sinai. So that's based on a Medrash brought in Yaakov Shimoni. So Hashem chose the generation, the people, and the mountain. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu, the Isha Elokim, the man of God, came to the mountain of God, I mean now Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the one who will be selected to lead Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, he approaches Har Sinai, comes to the mountain of God, and at this point, Hashem began the preparations to build up his great nation, the Olam Shel Torah, the world of Torah. And that's being built up on a world of destruction from before. Before the Torah was given, the world was going in the wrong direction. And at this point, Hashem was going to build a new world upon that. So he says here, when people want to designate a piece of property to build there, a major building, a palace, some sort of major construction work, they'll put signs there from the start. You'll see a big sign plopped down, come back in 2 years and you'll see here a new library, right, as we have in Wheaton now. Or
building site for Washington.
Yeah, exactly, right. Or the American Embassy in Jerusalem, right? Something like that, right? I'm sure there's a big sign wherever that's going to be. They're going to put it there. They moved into the consulate. They didn't build a new building yet. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to build some massive thing there soon, I'm sure. So too in Har Sinai, since this was a place Hashem chose to give the Torah, so Hashem wanted to put some sort of sign on this mountain, this will be the place. So what did he do? It says that he made a penis, like a lamp. He made some sort of torch there, which is the burning bush, as the sign, this mountain will be the mountain upon which we will accept the Torah, and new world will be built upon this mountain. And it was at this moment, this very moment, that Moshe Rabbeinu came close to the mountain. This became the mountain of Torah. Moshe veered off the path to see this beautiful sight of the burning bush, not being consumed. And at that point, he understood that this is going to be a very special place. He continues and says, Hashem told Moshe the sign that you will come back and serve me on this mountain. Along with your coming to this mountain, the Shechina, Hashem's presence, Kevyachol, will come down on the mountain as well. And now everything's prepared for Matan Torah. So this is the point in history where all the pieces were now in place. It was the right time, there was the right people, there was the right place, and the right person. And now when the person comes to the mountain, now everything's ready to go. So Hashem makes the sign of the burning bush, tell Moshe Rabbeinu, this is it, this is the time. So the only thing we're missing now is a free nation, because we're still slaves in Mitzrayim. So we work that one out, then the Torah will be given, and the world's going to change. And then he says, V'oshel asne bo'er, the sign of the burning bush, Veinu ochel hu os, and it's not being consumed, that was the sign that Moshe saw at that moment, and it was a sign of what will be in the future. V'gilui ha-shechina be'etz namuch, when Hashem revealed himself in this very lowly bush, that doesn't produce any fruit. It was a thorn bush. This inspired Moshe to believe that Hashem chooses very simple messengers. And Moshe Rabbeinu was very humble. We'll talk about more later how humble Moshe was. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, how can Hashem choose me to be the messenger to save Klal Yisrael? But when Moshe Rabbeinu connected the dots, he said Hashem chose this burning bush, this thorn bush, this lowly, fruitless bush. And Hashem chose Har Sinai, which we'll see is a very low-down mountain. It was a mountain that had no vegetation on it. It was kind of a dried-out desert mountain. So it must be that I'm also an appropriate shliach for Hashem. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu felt. Now, we know Moshe Rabbeinu was a very great person. But Moshe himself, in his own eyes, was very, very humble. And this actually was a lesson to Moshe, that despite the fact that I'm so lowly, as Moshe Rabbeinu thought, I could be Hashem's messenger to save Klal Yisrael. So that's the intro. So Har Sinai was the place Hashem designated from the start to be the right mountain. And when that came together with his messenger and his people during the right generation, all pieces were laid for Matan Torah. So that's the Oznayim LaTorah. But the fact it's called Har Elokim, it does seem to suggest there's a predetermined, like we're saying, a predetermined significance of this mountain. And if Moshe Rabbeinu understood it that way from the start, as it says, he came to Har Elokim, the Chazal explained to us that Moshe Rabbeinu did see something physically before the burning bush about this mountain, and that drew him towards it. So there's actually a quote from the Zohar that says a very fascinating thing. The Zohar says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Har Sinai, he was attracted like a magnet. Like he felt something about the mountain that pulled him in. And like we said before, it was kind of like they're one and the same. The mountain was humble, he was humble, he was the messenger from Matan Torah, so was the mountain, so they felt some sort of connection. There was a match between Moshe and the mountain. And then the Zohar continues that Moshe Rabbeinu saw something there that was very unique. Rabbi Yanai says that Moshe Rabbeinu knew it was the mountain of God because he saw birds trying to fly over it, and the birds couldn't quite do it. They would like be repelled back or something, they'd have to like, go around it, but when the bird tried to fly over the mountain, they wouldn't be able to make it through. So that's one interesting thing. And then Rev Yitzchak says that the birds seemingly, I think, would die and fall to Moshe's feet by this mountain. So something that's very strange about this mountain. I don't think it was because there was volcanic, you know, ashes coming out of it. It was a very special mountain that Moshe Rabbeinu recognized. So I was trying to think about what's the symbolism of these birds, you know, dying, or the birds have to be rejected by the mountain. Where do we find any connection to birds with Har Sinai? So it reminded me of a Gemara, Maseches Sukkah. The Gemara says that Hillel, the famous Hillel, had, you know, 80 major Talmidim. It says 30 of his Talmidim were so great that they were fit to have the Shekhinah dwell upon them like Moshe Rabbeinu. It says 30 were so great that they were fit to have the sun stop for them like Yeshua had. And then says the other 20 were somewhere in the middle, something like that. And then it says his greatest Talmud was Yonasan ben Uziel, and his smallest Talmud was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which he himself also was in a tremendous gadol who led Klal Yisrael. It's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was somebody who learned the entire Torah all the way through, you know, Halacha, Medrash, Gemara, Chumash, Navi. He understood the language of animals and of trees and all sorts of amazing things that he did. And then it says Yonasan ben Uziel, his greatest Talmud, when he would sit and learn, the birds would be burned up above his head. That's what it says. So Rashi explains in the Gemara there, Rashi says that Malachim gathered to hear Yonasan ben Uziel learn. And Malachim, I guess we understand to be made of fire in some way, and because of that, they burned up. But it's just hard for us to understand what that means. But you see a parallel. Har Sinai was a mountain that was designated for Torah, and the birds on the mountain burned up above the mountain. And the birds couldn't make it over, or they would drop dead at Moshe's feet. Yonasan ben Uziel, who was the greatest Talmud of Hillel, so somebody whose Torah learning was out of this world, it was so intense that birds were just singed up, you know, just burnt to a crisp above his head, whatever that means also. But you see this connection. So I was trying to figure out, you know, what's the symbolism of the birds being burnt up over his head? Like, why is that the sign for somebody who's very intensive, you know, holy Torah learning? Like, why is that? So I don't know if this is, there's a remez here, more of a mushel. I'm not sure if this is the pshat or just a mushel that comes along with it. But I saw a few Sfarim talk about the following idea. They said that the symbolism of these birds flying about are bad ideologies. Different ideas and ideologies that might distract one from Torah. You know, we talk about, you know, ideas are kind of floating around us. We even use those terminologies. You know, it's floating around my head. I have thoughts that are floating around in my head trying to, you know, and they distract us. And when you're not learning Torah in an intense way like that, so you can be distracted by many, many other things. Things which might, you know, other ideologies out there that might draw us in, certain concepts or notions or thought processes which may not be according to the Torah, but they entice us, they convince us, you know, they're appealing to us. When somebody is facing the truth, 100%, unadulterated, in purity and sanctity, these things aren't relevant, they just burn right up. You know, other ideologies, other concepts, other notions don't speak to you. Because I have the truth right in front of me, so why do I need, these other things aren't even going to excite me in any way. That I'm not interested in them. So when you're someone on the level of Yonasan ben Uzziel, whose Torah learning was with such kedusha and such tahara, so pure and intense and unadulterated, so nothing else spoke to him. You know, any ideas that would float around would just burn up by him. They didn't even register in his mind, because for him it was Torah ideology, Torah ideas, the emes of Torah, and that was it. For the rest of us, we have to sometimes grapple with other ideas that creep into our minds. We have to figure out, why is that right, why is that wrong, etc. Har Sinai is a place where, also, it was a place meant for emes to be presented to us. It was a place that from the start was the right place for Hashem to reveal the emes of Torah to the world. And therefore, Har Sinai is a place where essentially you're staring truth in the face, Har Sinai. So at Har Sinai, there's these birds also just burnt up, meaning that any other concept or ideology or notion in this world doesn't stand a chance at Har Sinai. So Har Sinai, the truth is so clear and so true, nothing else will even come to entice us in any way, shape, or form. So that's one connection you can make. But there's an interesting parallel between Yonasan ben Uzziel's learning and Har Sinai. So there's this quality of Har Sinai. It was a place in this world designated for Hashem Shechina to dwell. And there's a clarity of revelation there that no foreign ideas could ever approach or distract us from. And that's the Eish HaTorah. We talk about Torah compared to fire. Fire consumes. And fire is something, what gets its path, it takes it over and turns into fire. That's what it does. Because Torah has that ability that it consumes everything else. So somebody who's really excited and enthusiastic about Torah, it takes over. Mitzvot take over, and all that we do to follow Hashem's will kind of takes the front seat in our lives, and everything else should fall to the wayside. So that's the power of Torah. So that's one idea about Har Sinai. Now there's another medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, and it compares Har Sinai to the sulam, to the ladder of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov had his dream, he saw the sulam mutzav arza, the ladder that had its feet on the floor, and the top was going into the heavens. So the medrash actually says that Sinai is the gematria of sulam, without the vav, and it's chaser. They're both gematria of 60, 70, 80, 130. Both 130. So, meaning that there's some connection between the ladder and Har Sinai. And I think it's very simple, because the purpose of Har Sinai was to connect us from this world up to the heavens. It was like a ladder. Yaakov's ladder had its feet firmly planted on the ground, and had the tip in Shemayim to show that this world and the heavenly worlds can be together as one. Har Sinai is the same thing. Har Sinai was the place where Rashi explains, "Vierushim Har Sinai." Hashem came down on Har Sinai. Rashi says that Hashem laid out the heavens on Har Sinai like a blanket, meaning I would say it's the place where heaven and earth touched. It's the place where the Shemayim and the earth came together. That was Har Sinai, like a ladder. It connects the ground up to the sky. And therefore, Har Sinai is meant to be, it was designated as a place that should connect this world to the next world. That's what it's all about. The most famous idea as to why Har Sinai was chosen to be the mountain of Matan Torah is found in the Gemara a few different places. And it's essentially mentioned before, the idea of humility. The Gemara says in Maseches Megillah that all the mountains came complaining to Hashem, we're bigger, we're stronger, we're larger. Why does Har Sinai get to have Matan Torah? It's not fair. There's little old Har Sinai over here. Why is Matan Torah Har Sinai? And they really question Hashem's choice. So Hashem responds to them. He says, you're all Bali Gaiva, you're arrogant. And he says, Har Sinai is known for its humility. It's a smaller mountain. It's a very humble mountain. And therefore, that's why it was chosen. The Gemara says in Masechah Sota that Hashem set aside all their mountains and chose to place his Shechina on Har Sinai, and it bases it on the Pasuk, Es Daka Ushfal Ruach. Hashem says, I am with those who are downtrodden and humble. And Har Sinai, because it's smaller and it's humble, it was chosen. Har Sinai was a very short mountain, and that was the point. It represents humility. It represents that Hashem dwells his Shechina upon those who are humble. The Orach Chaim says that this is the message to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we said before, he tries to get out of Matan Torah. He says, out of being the leader of Klal Yisrael. He says, I'm nothing. I'm so small. Mi anochi. If you choose my brother Aaron, he's much greater than me. Choose somebody else. And Hashem says, I'm choosing you. Because why? Because just like Har Sinai is being chosen, because it's the smallest, you'll be chosen well because you're also very humble. And that's why the message occurred on Har Sinai, because Hashem was trying to teach Moshe this lesson. Same as he has the sneh. The Kli Yakar says even furthermore, he says, this is how Klai Yisrael was able to unite at Har Sinai. We know that when the Jews came to Har Sinai, they came with full unity. They're together as one. So the Kuyakar says that the very fact that the Jews approached Har Sinai, that brought them together. Why? Because until this point, there was infighting. There were separations. People don't realize it, but just before, it's pretty clear in the Chumash, but just before they came to Har Sinai was the fighting with Amalek. And that was in a place called Rephidim. So the Kli Akra says Rephidim is the same letter as Pirda, as separations, being separate. Because the Jews themselves had Pirda. They were separated from each other. They had fighting, they had factions that were arguing with one another. They got to Har Sinai, and they were inspired to humility. Now they were waiting, okay, we can't wait to get to the place of Matan Torah. And they're waiting to see this like huge mountain or something, and they get to Har Sinai, and that's it, this little tiny thing, that's where the Torah is being given. And they took a lesson from that. They said, well, if Hashem is giving the Torah on Har Sinai, that means Hashem's looking for humility. And humility allows people to have achdus and get along. Because why do people fight? People usually fight because everyone's standing up for their own personal honor. I want this, I know better than you. You know, I'm the greatest, everything's coming to me, and therefore follow what I say. And everyone says, no, I'm the greatest, and follow what I say. We may not say that, but we mean that. That's what we're thinking deep down. So they got to Har Sinai, and they said, we should be a little more humble about ourselves. That we should become more submissive, a little more flexible. And that allowed Klal Yisrael to join together as one. So the Kli Akar says that Har Sinai itself was the lesson that was able to bind Klal Yisrael together as one nation to receive the Torah in unity, in Achdus. And that was necessary. So they left for Fidim when they were still fighting each other. And he says they were seeking out their own honor and their own power. And when they were able to approach Har Sinai, they became humbled. And that was Har Sinai. So you see a very important lesson over here. If Har Sinai was chosen because of its humility, that means that it must be the humility is the main midah for receiving the Torah. I mean, Hashem could have, there are many good midos out there. And many midos are necessary to be good Jews. You know, we want to be generous, we want to be kind, we want to be humble, we want to be unselfish. There's a lot of things we want to be. So we want to be patient. I mean, we can listen to lists of good midos. But Hashem decided, in His wisdom, He showed us, that humility is the main midah to receive the Torah. That's what we have to go for. That's our main goal. So the question is, what's so important about humility? Why is humility the one? Why was that Hashem wanted to drive home in Har Sinai? So I think it's very, very simple. If you want to be able to let Hashem enter into your life, you have to give Him some space. Meaning, if I think I'm the center of it all, I'm the greatest, everything's about me, the whole world should bow down at my feet. So where are you leaving room for Hashem? Where are you leaving room to submit yourself to a higher authority? The Gemara says that Hashem tells the Baal Gaiva, you know, there ain't enough room in this world for me and you. So one of us has to go. And who's it going to be? It's not going to be Hashem. It's going to be the Baal Gaiva. That's who it's going to be. Because if you're a Baal Gaiva, that means that you're not allowing Hashem to enter into your life because you're putting yourself in the center. The same thing with Torah. Besides accepting Hashem, it's also the Torah itself. The Torah requires us to submit to Hashem's will and Hashem's laws. If I have arrogance and I say, well, I know better than that, I don't like that law, I think that it doesn't make any sense. So we might think that, and that's not necessarily a problem. If you're an anav, if you're humble, you say, you know what, Hashem knows better than me, who am I? I'll accept it. If you're a Baal Gaiva, you say, I'm not doing that, I don't think it makes any sense, and who's Hashem to tell me what to do anyways? And then that's the attitude the Baal Gaiva is going to have. So obviously there's no gradations of this. But without anava, you can't allow Hashem into your life, or Torah into your life. It doesn't work. Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the anav Mikol Adam, now, he was the right vehicle through which to give the Torah. Because not for Moshe Rabbeinu, if not for Zanava, we wouldn't have that ability to let Hashem into our lives. And Moshe Rabbeinu was for us the model. If you want to be the true recipient of Torah, you have to be humble, and then that allows Hashem to enter into your life, enter into your being, and the mitzvahs to enter into your lives as well. There's a very interesting point made by the Shem Yishmuel along these lines. I'm here somewhere. And he says, find it. Well, I can paraphrase, but can I find it here? Here it is. The Shem Yishmuel says, this is the one of the rabbis of Sakachov. He says that when you approach the idea of humility, so there's always the concern that if you become too looking down at yourself a little bit too much, then you lose your own sense of self-esteem. You won't have any joy in life. You'll become very, very, you know, to yourself, maybe depressed. Who am I? I'm a nothing. I'm a nobody. I'm a zero. And that's also not a good thing. So that's to be some sort of balance between that humility and that healthy, you know, share of self-esteem. You have to have that as well. So the Shemesh Shmuel says, that's the idea of Har Sinai. Now Hashem, if you wanted to choose, show humility, he could have chosen, you know, a valley, a canyon. You know, very, very low down, the Grand Canyon, right? That could be the sign of humility. But Hashem chose a mountain, but a lowly mountain. The point being, you have to feel that you're a Har, meaning that you have some greatness to yourself. Now you are big, you are special, there is this sense of dignity and self-esteem. But yeah, you're also lowly. They have to go together. He says you have to have Hachna veGavhus. You have to have both humility and Gavhus, we'll call it pride, and veChozek HaLev, and also, you know, the strength of the heart, all together as one, to be the complete Jew. So Har Sinai is both humble, being that's a very lowly, short mountain, but it's a Har, still a mountain. It's not a hill, it's not, you know, it's not a mountain, it's a mountain. It's not a valley, it's a mountain. And that's the point. And he says furthermore, he says the Jews, you know, as we know, we're naturally stubborn. The Gemara calls us Azin Sheb Umos, you know, we're the most stubborn of all nations, which is important for us. If we weren't stubborn, we would have been gone long ago. It's because we're stubborn, we still keep the Torah to this very day. But if we're so stubborn and filled with our own pride, that's also not good. So you have to have this combination of the two. And the fact that we are stubborn is for our own benefit, because that allows us to stand up to anti-Semitism, to stand up to pressure around us from the outside world, to be proud of who we are despite the fact the world around us is different than us. That's very important to have. The fact that people have to give their lives on Kiddush Hashem. The Medrash says, O Yehudi, O Tzaluv. Either I'll be a Jew or I'll be, you know, basically killed at the stake. But we have that stubbornness to us, which is important to have. But yet, if we just are stubborn and we just have this like pride in who we are, but don't have any sense of humility, then we're going to be Bali Gaiva. So you have to have this healthy combination of the two things. It has to be the fact that I'm a Har, I'm a mountain, I'm dignified, I'm proud of who I am, I'm a great person, but yet I have to be very humble as well. I guarantee Moshe Rabbeinu knew his greatness. He also was Adam Mikol Adam. You know, the same person. He knew that he was somebody that spoke to Hashem whenever he wanted to. He knew that his face was shining with Kedusha. He had to put a mask over his face because he was so holy. He knew that. And despite that, maybe because of that, he became the most humble of all men. So you have to have both of those things. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not have this issue of low self-esteem. He wasn't somebody who was unhappy or depressed. He was very happy. He had a very, very healthy sense of self, but he's also very, very humble. And those two things have to come together. So that's that Har Sinai to us shows us that lesson. Now the name Har Sinai, we mentioned a little bit before, but the Medrash actually has six different names for Har Sinai. What's the real name? So it's actually Machlokas in the Gemara. Is the real name Sinai, or is the real name Choriv? That's a dispute in the Gemara. We're not sure which is the real name. But yeah, Har Sinai has, we'll call them six names. Some will call them nicknames. But there's six names. So some say, like we said before, it's called Har Sinai because of the sneh, because of the thorn bush, the burning bush. But the Gemara has a big discussion about this, and Midrashim elaborate on the names of Har Sinai. So I'm going to go through its names and see what we can pull out from the names of Har Sinai. So I'll tell you the six, and then we can talk about each one. The first one is Har Elokim, like we said in the Pasuk, the mountain of God. Next one is, there's no particular order, by the way, this is just six names. Har Bashan, that's another one. Some of these are found in Tehillim Samaches. That's where a lot of these names are found. The third one is Har Gavnunim. The fourth one is Har Chorev, which is a more well-known one. Fifth one is Har Sinai. That's obviously the most well-known one. And the sixth one is Har Chemed. So those are our six names given to Har Sinai based on the Medrash. So what all these names mean? If these are the names that the Torah gives to Har Sinai, each one has to have its own separate meaning. So let's start with Sinai. The idea of Sinai, the Gemara discusses at length. And the Gemara first says, maybe it's called Har Sinai because of the Nisim which occurred there. Like Sinai and Nes are similar letters, because it was a very miraculous mountain. You had a burning bush, you had Matan Torah. Maybe it's because of the Nisim. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, then call it Har Nisai, not Sinai. Right? The letters are reversed. So then it says, well, maybe it's called Har Sinai because of the Simen Tov. There was a good sign for Klai Yisrael given there. So then it says, well, then call it Har Sinai, not Sinai, Sinai. Doesn't work either. So Gemara says, okay. So we call it Har Sinai, and this is where we actually have this play on words of sinna, of hatred. It says, because Yarda Sinna La'akum Alav. Hatred came down to the non-Jews on this mountain. Now, what does it mean there was hatred given to the non-Jews on this mountain? So there's two ways to approach this.
You were asking about Sinna.
Yeah, so this is the connection. Sinna and with a Samech, Sinna with a Sin, but it's the same concept. So there's two ways to understand this. Number one would be that Hashem rejected other nations because they didn't accept the Torah. I mean, Chazal tell us Hashem went around to all the nations and offered them the Torah as well to see what they would say. And every nation was not willing to say Nasil v'nishma like Klal Yisrael was. So because they rejected the Torah, Hashem rejected them as well. So one meaning would be that the hatred came down to the Umos, meaning that Hashem rejected the other nations at Har Sinai. So that's one idea. Now obviously Hashem doesn't hate other nations. I don't know if we take that literally, but there's a certain sense of departing from one another. You know, Hashem said, you had the opportunity to be Klal Yisrael. You could have also taken the Torah. You could have also served me in the same way, had that relationship, intimate connection as Klal Yisrael does, and you turned it down. So we're going to part ways to some degree, and Hashem had, there's some sort of like rift between Hashem and the other nations. That's one meaning of Yarda Sinna L'Akum Alav. The other meaning given to it is that the hatred of the non-Jews for Klal Yisrael began there, anti-Semitism. So the sinna, the hatred, came upon them towards us. And I think the explanation of it's very easy. I mean, it could be based on jealousy. Now, you were chosen to be God's people and we weren't. It could be some sense of spite because, you know, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, he himself wrote, the Jews give conscience to the world. You know, if we got rid of the Jews, then we get rid of our conscience as well. You know, the Jews bring a certain element to the world of morality. And ethics, which make people, you know, control themselves. And everyone likes that. People don't want to have a sense of conscience. People don't want to control themselves all the time. And Klal Yisrael stands there and represents something of a different world. We represent, you know, God's people. We represent, you know, morality and ethics in this world and holiness. So that makes people upset. So the jealousy which is there, or the spite which is there, that began all at Har Sinai. That hatred began at Har Sinai. So those are two different ways it's explained in the Medrash. And there's a third way as well. Another Medrash says it's called Har Sinai because Sham Sinai Yisrael Yonim Va'av Estachtonim. There Har Sinai Hashem despised the upper worlds and showed his love to the lower worlds. Meaning that, I think this is a reference to the Malachim. We spoke about, I think, last year, how all the angels were upset about Matan Torah. There's all these debates the Midrashim record between the Malachim and Hashem. How can you give this precious, beautiful Torah to these people, human beings who have flaws and have problems? Keep it up here with the angels. In Har Sinai, the opposite occurred. Hashem says that I hold dear the lower world, the physical world, and I reject the upper world in that sense. Meaning because the purpose of creation, why did Hashem make a physical world in the first place? Hashem made this world so that human beings that are physical could connect to the upper worlds. So really Hashem looks down at our world as the purpose. You know, our world is what it's all about. So at Har Sinai, this mission began. At Har Sinai, like we said before, it's the ladder. Hashem connected the upper world to the lower world. At that point, Hashem said, you know, my focus will be upon the lower worlds. That's my focus. Nefesh HaChayim, he explains at length the idea that our actions are what determine what happens in the upper worlds. The human being's actions impact the spiritual realm in incredible ways. This, no, it all happens down here. That's where it all happens these days. Not up there, but down here. What we do then turns the wheels up in Shemayim as well. So at the point of Matan Torah, Har Sinai, Hashem was so near the Elyonim. Hashem at that point says, I reject the Elyonim, I reject the upper worlds, and I'm focusing my attention down on the lower worlds. And that's the purpose of the Bria, that we should be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim from within, you know, our standing in the physical realm. So that's Har Sinai, number one. Next name, Har Elokim, Mountain of God. This is pretty straightforward. The Midrashim have two different takes on this. One is that Hashem was Hodia Elokuso. On Har Elokim, Hashem informed the world of his divinity, his godliness, his greatness. And then the second one is, there Har Sinai, we were Makabel Elokuso. We accepted, we committed to his Elokos, to his divinity. So I think it's very important to make that distinction. Hashem revealed himself to the world also in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim we saw Hashem do incredible miracles and wonders, and there we saw Hashem's power. In Har Sinai, Hashem took it further and he spoke to the world, he revealed his will. That was all a hodah, a revelation to us. But beyond the revelation, the Medrash says, we are makabel, we committed ourselves to Hashem. And to me, that's the main focus, the main point. What's the difference between a Jew the day before Shavuos and the day after Shavuos? So the Mishnah tells us that the Avos did the mitzvos. We knew the mitzvos. The Jews at Har Sinai had some mitzvos already. The main thing wasn't the mitzvos. What was the main thing? The main thing was it went from being doing it based on our own personal, based on our own options. It was voluntary, to being obligated to mitzvos. That was the big difference. There was a commitment made. There was a relationship which occurred. You have people who, let's say, a secular couple that lives together for years without getting married. Why do they do that? There's no commitment. They're aware of each other, they like each other, they have a nice life together, but without marriage, there's no commitment there. Har Sinai, there was a commitment made. Until Har Sinai, we respected Hashem, we knew what Hashem wanted from us to some degree, we did it as we chose, but there was no commitments that were there. There was no obligations. At Har Sinai, that was the chasana. We know that Har Sinai is compared to a wedding, and that point means there was a dual commitment made on both ends. We committed to Hashem, and Hashem kevyoch committed to us. It goes both ways. And to me, this is one of the most important points about Shavuos. Maybe we'll talk a little more later, is that Shavuos is a day of commitment. It's there we refresh that commitment yearly. Because, again, it was the day of our marriage, and we're committed to one another. And every year in Shavuos, we have to be able to say to Hashem, not only do I recognize you, and respect you, and know your greatness, but I'm committed to you 100%. I'm a kabbal yerlikus. It's a kabbalah, a commitment. I'm not just recognizing it, it's not just a gilui, it's not just a revelation, but it's a true relationship being made with dual obligations. And that's the idea of the Kabbal Elokus, so it's Har Elokim. It's the mountain of God where we accepted upon ourselves His Elokus. The next name, Har Bashan. That's the next name. So the Medrash here, again, seems to be somewhat of a pun, I guess. The Medrash says the word Bashan is like the word Shane, teeth. Like Beshane, with teeth. And it says, Kol Mash Adam Ochel Beshinov. Everything you eat with your teeth, it comes b'schus haTorah, because of the merit of Torah. So meaning that our whole idea of sustenance, of parnasa, is based at Har Sinai. So what does that mean exactly? I mean, that's a kind of a funny statement. That what you eat with your teeth came from Har Sinai. So I think it's based on another point made in the Gemara, which is that until Har Sinai, the Gemara says that, if you look into Tehillim, in the big Hodu Hashem Ki Tov, the Halal Gadol, the Seder on Shabbos morning in Shacharis in Pesukei Zimra, there's 26 Hodus in that long Kapitel Tehillim. And the 26 Hodus corresponds to 26 generations prior to Matan Torah. If you do your math from Adam until Matan Torah, it's 26 generations. And the Gemara says, because until Matan Torah, the world existed only because of Chesed of Hashem. The world didn't have any way to earn its keep. If there was no obligations, if there was no requests of the world, then we can't earn anything because there was no mission given to us. So why did Hashem sustain the world? It was with His chesed. It was purely kindness. In Matan Torah, that all changed. In Matan Torah, Hashem gave the world a mission, which means now you have to earn your keep at this point. Now your food is not going to come because of chesed of Hashem. It only comes because of the schus of the Torah. Because of the schus of you keeping the Torah, following the Torah, listening to the Torah, that's the schus of the food of the world. So that's Har Bashan tells us that this mountain is now going to be that which gives you your sustenance. So that's the Har Bashan. The fourth name, again, no particular order, is Har Gavnunim. It's also found in Tehillim Samaches, Har Gavnunim. As an aside, they say this is one of the references to eating milchaks on Shavuos, because Gavnunim is like Lashon Gavina, like cheese. So you have this, that connection, Har Sinai was Gavnunim, and Gavina is cheese, so cheesecake. You have to find cheesecake in all your Shavuos brushes. It's very important. So there's Har Gavnunim is the mountain of Gavnunim. So what is Gavnunim exactly? So there's two different takes upon this in the Medrash. One says that Gavnunim comes from the word Gibein. Now Gibein is in Parshas Emor. And it's listed there as one of the different movement of a Kohen. If a Kohen is a Gibein, he can't serve as a Kohen. What's a Gibein? So Rashi explains it's something to do with, I think the eyelashes are grown in some funny way or something. I don't know the exact physical, it's something to do with the eyes, the eyelashes being overgrown, something like that. That's a gibein. But it's a mum. It's a blemish in a kohen. So the Medrash says that the all other mountains became labeled as Balei Mumin compared to Har Sinai. Sar Sinai was Har Gavnunim because it casted a blemish upon every other mountain in the world. You're all Balei Gaiva, you're all arrogant, and I'm humble. So that's one reason for Har Gavnunim. So it's the humility of Har Sinai. I don't know if I made that announcement, right? But that's what it's telling us. Furthermore, the Medrash says, I don't really get this one so much, but it says that the Har Gavnunim means that the people became Nikiyim, became cleansed, similar to Gavina, like cheese, which is clean. So I don't know why cheese is clean, that I don't get.
But it's the whole process of making cheese.
Yeah.
It's washed very often.
Oh, okay.
So the impurities are taken out.
Okay, there you go. Perfect. Thank you.
Bashan.
Yeah.
Was that in the kingdom of Og Melech HaBashan? Og Melech HaBashan?
I don't think they were near each other.
Where was that kingdom? Har Sinai was in a place.
Right.
And what was that?
Because I'm not sure, but I think that Bashan was further north. Because Har Sinai was pretty close to Mitzrayim.
It's in the Sinai, what's called the Sinai Desert, which is like Egypt, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and Bashan was
Edom, Ammon, they're all there, and I was wondering,
because when they conquered Bashan, that was Ivra Yardin, like they took over after they landed in Yeshua's times, and that was further north. This we're talking Har Sinai was somewhere closer to Mitzrayim.
Close by.
Wasn't it near Midian? Because that's where Moshe was before.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Sounds like that. Yeah. But again, the exact location we don't know, but it was in that area. That's what it seems like. So one idea of Gavnunim is it was clean like cheese. They're talking about my cheese is clean. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so too, Klai Yisrael at Har Sinai became cleansed of all of their blemishes, meaning that Chazal tell us that Har Sinai, all the Jews who had any sort of disabilities were healed. The blind were able to see, those who couldn't hear were able to hear, those who were crippled were able to walk again. Everybody became healed at Har Sinai. So, like it says in Shir Shirim, Mum Ein Bach, we had no more mum in Har Sinai. So it's talking about the idea of cheese being cleansed of all impurities, so too we were also healed of all mumin at Har Sinai. The Har Chemed is the idea of chemda, desire, and that's because Hashem desired to rest His Shechinah upon this mountain. Which we said before, this is a mountain designated, preordained by Hashem from a long time before to become the mountain of Matan Torah. And then finally, it's called Chorev. So Chorev literally means like hot or dry. And one meaning is it wasn't a very fruitful mountain. It was a mountain which was pretty much desert. Nothing really grew on it, except for these like thorny bushes and stuff, I guess the sneh. And we know that a nes occurred at Matan Torah, and the mountain became covered in grass. That's why it talks about the sheep wanting to graze by the mountain. Al Yeru, it says there is a mitzvah, there is a command from Hashem that the animals can't graze by the mountain. Well, they don't know the desert. Where did all these pastures come from? The answer is there was a nes which occurred. And even though Har Sinai was in a very, very dry desert area, for Matan Torah became very fruitful. The minhag of having of using trees or flowers on Shavuos and shoals comes from this idea that Har Sinai was covered in vegetation through a nes.
Is that the same what Shimshon Raphael Harsh named his?
Chorev. Yeah, Chorev.
Why? Was there a better title for what he was saying?
I'm not sure, but I assume he named it Chorev because he's discussing there the reasons for mitzvos, and they're all given at Chorev. That's my guess, but I don't know. It could be his introduction, he says, I'm not sure. He didn't call it Sinai, he called it Chorev, so
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. So also, the lesson of this, I think, would be the Torah makes somebody fruitful. I mean, the Torah is supposed to be able to be our guidebook, to help us in life develop to the best of our ability. I always say that we call the Torah Sefer Toldos Adam. This is the Sefer of the production of man. And the Ramban says something along the lines of the fact that Torah makes us productive. It allows us to be the most productive people we can be. We call it Torah Schaim, the guide to life. Because when you have your handbook, you know how to use your life more appropriately. You know how to maximize potential. I like to give the mashal. Let's say you buy some new electronic. You know how to use it. So you might guess, a few buttons here and there. But if you read the handbook, you can maximize its productivity.
Or you can ask your grandchild.
Right. I've had this thing for like 15 years. I don't know how to use anything besides the record and the stop. There are all these settings on it. I don't know what to do. Yeah, I think if I figure it out.
I'm going
YouTube. But if you have the manual, you actually read it, then you know how to use all the functions. So the Torah is Torah Chaim. It's the manual for life. And if you have the Torah, you can then maximize productivity of life because you learn how to use life based on the instructions of the Maker. That's what you have. So the idea of Chorev becoming fruitful is the idea that Torah makes us all fruitful. If we learn Torah, and we follow Torah, and we live Torah, we become fruitful, productive human beings. And the Medrash says additionally, that from Har Sinai, Misham Nutlu Sanhedrin Rishus Laharug B'Chorev. At Har Sinai, the Sanhedrin got their permission to kill by the sword, because Chorev and Cherev relate. And meaning that the authority of the Beis Din and of the Rabbanin, even to execute, came at Har Sinai. So I think there's two important points here. Number one, it's the authority of the Rabbanin is a very important part of this. You know, at Har Sinai, we got the Torah Shebal Peh and Torah Shebichsav. We got Hashem's mitzvos, and we got the human's involvement in those mitzvos. And therefore, Sanhedrin was given their power, the Rabbanim were empowered to paskin, to rule, to judge. That was all given Har Sinai. And furthermore, it shows us the seriousness of mitzvos. The fact that some mitzvos may incur capital punishment in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that shows us how important and serious mitzvos really are. And that began Har Sinai. And Har Sinai Hashem gave the world mitzvos and said, these mitzvos are so important, there's a Sanhedrin out there who could execute you for not doing them properly. So that's one message of Chorev. And then it says furthermore, at Chorev, the non-Jewish nations decided their fate. And it uses a pasuk, it says, I don't have it in front of me, it says that, did I write it down? I forgot the pasuk. But the pasuk says something along the lines that they will be yecharev, they will be destroyed or dried out. I mean, we said before, when the non-Jews rejected the Torah, you know, they had essentially signed off on their destiny as well at that point. One more medrash says that the Torah itself is called a sword, as it says, cherev pifios b'yadam, that there was a double-edged sword in their hands, refers to Torah. And this also, I think, you know, plays upon the idea that Torah is our power, it's our greatest weapon. If we want to succeed in life and we want to be able to overcome our enemies, is it the physical sword or the Torah which is able to help Klal Yisrael win out over the enemies? And we know it's the Torah. Elav Arechav, Elav Asusim, the other nations, they have chariots and they have horses. We call out to Hashem and that's how we become victorious. So the Torah is a cherev, not because we go out and kill with the Torah, but because the koach of Torah, the schus of Torah, guards us and protects us and helps us find our place in life. So that's the idea of chorev. So those are six names of Har Sinai. So a few more points. Har Sinai has no remaining Kedusha. We don't know where it is. I don't think it matters where it is at this point.
It's a one-shot deal.
It would be a museum or a tourist site. But there's no Kedusha on Har Sinai. It was a one-shot deal, and it's over. Har Abayis, the Beis HaMikdash, there's remaining Kedusha there. To this very day, has Kedusha. Shin Kol B'Fafana, if you're Tameh, etc. That Kedusha remains. And the question is asked, why does Har Sinai have no Kedusha, but Har Abayis still has Kedusha? And the answer which I've heard is the following, a very important thing. When you have a one-shot deal, even if it's incredibly powerful and spiritual, there's miracles, there is Kol Subrakim, thunder and lightning, Hashem spoke from the fire, Moshe Rabbeinu, Luchos, it was an amazing, amazing experience. It was a one-time thing, and it didn't require any sort of personal avoda. The Beis HaMikdash was a place where we had to serve Hashem day in and day out. And the way somebody becomes Kadosh is not through one time, you know, rushes of adrenaline. The Kedusha comes from day in and day out service of Hashem, self-sacrifice, avoda, working on the little things. That's what Kedusha really is. Har Abayis is a place where we were there day in and day out. We gave of ourselves, of our time, of our money. We had to focus ourselves. We had to be very, very devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single moment in the Beis HaMikdash. That creates Kedusha, because what really changes a person around, not one-time experiences, is day in and day out of daily life. That's what changes us around. So Har Sinai was an incredible experience, but it's no longer, and it's not really relevant where it is. I mean, the mountain itself was a place, it was an important place, as we've said, but we didn't do anything there to sanctify it. Hashem put down the Kedusha, and then took off the Kedusha.
It says Hashem. If I knew where it was, it would become an object of Avodah Zarah.
You're probably right.
Well, there's a monastery on the top, and on the way, well, which the, they think
where they think
is.
It is. Yeah, the monastery so there.
Did.
Right.
You know, they did.
How these kinds so they did. His mother chose that place. I mean, yeah, like she knew. No one knows.
Right.
Because
right.
If we did know,
right, They would have.
This would be a vote of Zara.
It's like Moshe Rabbeinu's grave. We don't have either. For the same reason. You know, these places, you know, for us, is too much of a risk to even know where they are. You know, but you're probably right. It would have been a place for a vote of Zara, and we missed the wide. And we should give it the fact that it was an amazing thing happened, like we said. Kedusha, that's not what Kedusha is all about. Kedusha is about day in and day out, how do I deal with my common everyday struggles? Do I say Lashon Hara, or do I hold back? Am I kind? Am I giving? Or am I selfish? Am I humble? Am I arrogant? Do I make brachos with kavana or not make with kavana? Do I daven? Do I not daven? Do I daven with kavana or not? This is daily kedusha. A person who lives decades, every single day, going through those decisions and making the right choices, that person is a kadosh. If you do one incredible act, it's very special, but it doesn't drive home kedusha. There's a very famous quote from the Rambam. It says in Pirkei Avos, "Hakol fi rov ha-maisa." Everything follows the abundance of deeds. So the Rambam says very famously, he says that all things equal, it's better to give $1,000 to tzedakah, $1 at a time, than $1,000 at once. Why is that? Because $1,000 at once is a generous act, but it doesn't make you generous. If you give $1 1,000 times, it makes you become a generous person. And that's the idea. $1,000 at once is it's a nice chunk of money, nice thing to give. But a one-time thing doesn't make you generous. It just means you did a nice act. But if you're giving day in and day out, even if it's a smaller amount of money, you become a generous human being because you're training yourself. You're bringing in that kedusha to yourself, and you're changing yourself because of it. So Har Sinai, as special as it is, it doesn't have the maila. This is the virtue of Har Abayis, which is the day in and day out of avoda done towards the Kosh Baruch Hu. So the lead up to Shavuos begins in the Torah that Klai Yisrael came to Har Sinai, and it says. This is in Shmos Perek, getting good tests. The Chodesh HaShlishi, the third month, meaning Sivan, L'Seis Ben Yisrael Emeretz Mitzrayim, B'Yom HaZeh Bo Midbar Sinai. So they approached Har Sinai. That was the very beginning of Matan Torah. They spent 6 days there, or 7 days according to some, before the Torah was given, and just standing at the mountain became a very powerful experience. But the first point was they approached the mountain. So that's where we are right now. Rosh Chodesh is beginning right now. This is exactly the day this is occurring on, the first day of Sivan. And this is when Klai Yisrael was approaching Har Sinai before Matan Torah. And for us as well, you have to relive the experience. So I think it's very important for us to try to think through what was it like to approach Har Sinai. And one thing is, you know, what we may have thought through in the past is just to stand there listening to Hashem speak with all of Klai Yisrael, the thunder and the lightning and the smoke and the fire and everything. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's incredible. But before that, you know, we're talking now about the mountain. Just imagine looking at that mountain and saying, why did Hashem choose this mountain? What is it about Har Sinai that's so special? And now we have this reflection to make. We know the answer. The main answer is humility. But there's a lot more about this mountain, which is not just about the humility, but this is a place that Hashem felt was the right place to give the Torah on, and this is really the steps to Matan Torah. It's a mountain, but it's humble. There's pride, there's humility. And there's commitment made there. Tara Elokim, because at that point we committed to Hashem. We had this, we became mitzvah osa, we became commanded in mitzvos, we made that commitment. And so Sulam, it's a ladder, this is the ladder between the heavens and the earth, bringing us, giving us the ability to reach down from the earth up into Shemayim, bringing Shemayim down to the earth. Now everyone asked the question in the Haggadah, Ilu Kervanoth Lifnei Har Sinai, V'lonoslan Lonos HaTorah Dayinu. The famous question asked is, what's the value of being in Har Sinai without the Torah? What's the value of being there? If there's no Torah, then I'm just standing by a mountain. The answer is, there's a lot of value being by this mountain. This mountain, besides the experience which was there, has so much to offer us. There's one final point. The Ramban makes a very interesting comment. The Ramban says, when discussing the Mishkan, the Ramban says that the sod of the Mishkan, you know, its main idea is that it's meant to be an ongoing Maimon Har Sinai. Meaning that the Mishkan, just like Har Sinai, Hashem rested upon the mountain, His Shekhinah was there, there was a revelation, there was a closeness, there was a power, there was an energy. So too the Mishkan had this going on constantly. Har Sinai, as we said, occurred once. It was a one-time thing, it happened, and it was over. But the Mishkan was meant to encapsulate that experience. Mishkan was meant to take that experience and carry it on day in and day out in our lives, and by extension, the Beis Hamikdash after that. That's what I would assume. So for us, unfortunately, we don't have our Sinai, we don't have a Mishkan, we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. What we do have is what we call Mikdash Ma'at. And we refer to shuls as Mikdash Ma'at. And which means that there's a miniature sense of this Mikdash in a shul. So by extension, there's a miniature sense of Har Sinai in a shul as well. A shul is a place where we go to feel the connection to Hashem, to learn, to grow, to daven, hopefully become humbled in Hashem's presence. Now, everything we've discussed. So if we want to have some sort of like place to go, maybe to reflect upon this, I guess a shul is the best place that we have to reflect upon this idea. But ultimately, I think that our contemplation for Shavuos should be on these two points. I think number one point is this idea of humility. Humility is the key to Matan Torah. And number two, I think, is the idea of commitment. To me, those are the two major points about Har Sinai. Every time there's a Yontif, I always say, it's not time just to remember the past, but we re-experience it once again. The same powers in the air that was there at Har Sinai 3,000 years ago, it comes in the air every single year. Hashem gives that energy, that spiritual potential is there waiting for us to grab onto it. So during the next few days, Klal Yisrael in those times was standing by Har Sinai, and we too can experience that same feeling. We have to use our minds, we have to use our imagination, we have to use our feelings. But to experience that would be a very powerful step in us growing and really approaching Shavuos in the proper way. So.